I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know. This week, I learned something very sad about one of our regulars on this segment. Will Leach of Sports on Earth is a Knicks fan. That's not sad for me, sad for Will. And that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by Will and by Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports, both via Skype. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello.
Always good to be here.
Will, my condolences, and why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I almost had a way out of it this week, Bill, and I didn't take it. Well, a large part of my career, generally speaking, I consider almost like my beat to be fandom, you know, writing about fandom, about other people's fandom, about my own fandom, and kind of the fundamental tenet of my whole writing about fandom is that you don't switch teams. You don't abandon your teams. No matter how bad it gets, this is just something fundamental and core to who you are, and you can't drop that. Boy, did the Knicks press that this week. The idea, Phil Jackson, Phil, whatever your thoughts about Phil Jackson, I think as a coach he has his bona fides, as a general manager, decidedly less so. There's one thing that all 29 of the other NBA GMs have in common. They would never trade Kristaps Porzingis because they are not crazy people. So I wrote for Sports on Earth this week. I put it on the line, do the one thing I vowed I would never do. If the Knicks traded Kristaps Porzingis, I would renounce my Knicks fandom. It's the one thing after Isaiah Thomas, after everything that's going on with this franchise, is the one thing that would make me renounce it. Phil Jackson gave me a reprieve from the governor by not trading Kristaps Porzingis for now. However, I have to say, I kind of think that ultimately the meanest thing that Phil Jackson could have done was not do the thing that would have let me let loose of the Knicks.
Yeah, would have let you off the hook. Absolutely.
First of all, I think it's hilarious that Phil Jackson is now like literally tormenting multiple generations of Knicks fans and ruining their hopes and dreams. That's tremendous. And if this was all some sort of inside job sabotage, I would not be surprised. In terms of trading Porzingis, I mean, that's Will's right. It's crazy. In some ways, you know, draft night, the Knicks get an A++++ just by not trading him. I don't even know who they took with their draft pick. It doesn't really matter that much. I do feel what Will's saying about the once you're a fan, you can't stop being a fan of a team. You know, I think there's a kind of a doomed romance to that if you're a Knicks fan. But I also think at some point in life, like with everything in life, there's a point where you should cut your losses. And I do think Knicks fans should at least consider taking a break. You can always come back later, but maybe just take a break for a few years or a decade or so.
You know, I grew up in New Jersey, and I'm the guy who has broken your rule, Will, because I was a Knicks fan back in the days of Walt Frazier, Dave DeBuscher, Willis Reed, and Bill Bradley, and that was a great team to root for. All you have to do to stop being a fan of the team that you grew up following is move. Move somewhere else.
We live in an on-demand world, Bill. I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan here in Georgia, and as far as my children know, we live next door to Busch Stadium. There's Cardinals stuff everywhere in this house. The game is constantly playing. I can make them believe they live next to the Garden, only a little bit quieter.
Patrick, I invite you to move us on to the topic of star basketball players who aren't getting paid, at least for now.
Right. So my story is one that I wrote for Vice Sports. Shameless plug, really. The idea is simple, and this is it. Historically black colleges and universities should start a pay-for-play basketball league with no amateur restrictions. They should go out and scoop up lots of the best high school and even college players. And they should essentially create a new model for college sports. Now, this plan comes from Andy Schwarz, who's an economist that worked on the Ed O'Bannon case, mm-hmm. where you saw former and current athletes suing the NCAA in federal court over trying to profit from their name, image, and likenesses. Andy Schwarz looked at this and he figured these legal challenges are not working just yet. They're not working fast enough. What if there's a way to take on the NCAA cartel the old-fashioned way, by actual competition? To take on any cartel, you got to look at people that are part of it who really aren't benefiting from it. And that's where the HBCUs come in. The HBCUs have fallen further and further behind in terms of facilities, finances, and they have a lot to gain by trying something different. And it could really work. You really just need a broadcaster that's willing to pay for this, and sponsors and investors. They figure the startup cost to be about $30 to $50 million. But look at it this way. Let's say you're a top high school recruit. You're being offered a quality education, national exposure, campus with a great community and tradition, the freedom to actually pursue commercial endorsement opportunities. You don't have to deal with the NCAA's annoying rules, and you're getting a salary of $50,000 to $100,000 a year. That's not a bad deal.
I think that it is a wonderful concept and a wonderful idea. And there are so many forces aligned against this. I thought there's a terrific story, Patrick. And one of the things you brought up that the league would really need would be like a figurehead or someone that was well known in the basketball community with a lot of money, like say a LeBron James. For me, this seems like a wonderful post-retirement project for LeBron James to be the front end of this league, a guy that has no connection to the world of college basketball and therefore and knows how this works entirely. To me, the saddest part of this story was the idea that even if this got going, it would be difficult for the HBCU schools, because when someone like North Carolina AT&T got a recruit that North Carolina wanted, they would go complain to the legislature. Like that is, there's just something about that idea that even if one of the small schools started to get a little advantage, they just go to the legislature and go to the government and try to make them stop them. This is such a wonderful concept idea. I think it just requires so many people willing to buck the system that I keep waiting for more and more people to do that.
Well, I'm in favor of bucking the system. First of all, it includes compensation for the players, which I think is basic. Beyond that, it would cause the heads of a lot of people at NCAA headquarters in Indianapolis to explode, and that would be good. And finally, it would rob at least some of the multimillionaire college coaches of the players they covet. So put me down as a yes for this. Patrick, why don't you wrap this up for us?
Will is right. There are a lot of obstacles to this. There's cultural obstacles. There's financial obstacles, potentially legal obstacles. If the dominant Power Five schools went to their state legislatures and told them, you know, make this stop somehow, they could put a lot of pressure on HBCUs. They could put funding pressure on them. So there is a lot to overcome. But I will say this. If it was 1995 and someone's saying, hey, let's take on Microsoft, people would laugh at you. But I don't think anyone's laughing at Google, Apple, Facebook anymore. Disruption always starts with a crazy sounding idea.
All right. I'd like to talk a little about blood and drugs. Over the past 9 years, three players, count them three, on the PGA Tour have been suspended for using performance-enhancing drugs. One of them, actually, Scott Stallings, never failed a drug test. He turned himself in when he learned that a prescription he'd been using after he'd been injured contained an element on the PGA's banned list because apparently that's the sort of thing golfers do.
The golfiest thing ever.
Yes, one of the golfiest things ever. You're right. Anyway, this week the PGA announced that blood and not just urine would be tested. Golfers are going to have to submit to these invasive tests. Three suspensions in 9 years does not sound to me like a crisis, and I wonder if this is absolutely necessary. Feels to me like one more solution in search of a problem, kind of like coming down on voter fraud that isn't happening. Does anybody want to defend the PGA on this?
I will never want to defend the PGA on anything. You know, like a lot of other sports, this feels like another one of those. We've got a testing thing in place, but all told, we'd rather not make it look like we have a problem. So it feels like a lot of testing programs. If you are very, very sloppy, they will catch you. But if you're not and you actually know what's going on, you'll be able to elude all the testing if you decide to take the drugs while still letting the league say, oh, we're taking a stand on this.
I mean, Will's 100% right. I mean, drug testing in sports are generally IQ tests. I mean, that's kind of how they work for a lot of different reasons. And they're mechanisms of public relations. And the ideal drug testing program for a sports league catches a few people, but not too many. So I also don't think necessarily golf has a huge PED issue. I'm not sure golf that there's a like humongous amount of drugs that would actually help you be that much better at it. Now, maybe there are things that help with calming nerves that could help you. I know golfers are fitter now than they used to be. Maybe there's some stuff you can take that helps you train and recover better. But for the most part, I agree with you, Bill. This does seem like a solution in search of an actual problem.
For what it's worth, if they did allow them to use PEDs, I might find golf more fun to watch.
Bigger, more ripped golfers would be more fun to watch.
I mean, they're having a hard time getting me now.
For the record, when NPR falls into line and starts testing all of us, I'm okay with it. Test me every day. I have nothing to hide, just in case I'd previously given anybody some other impression.
Does that go for guests?
You know, does it mean you'll never talk to me again if I say yes?
Bye. I have to go. Bye. Bye.
Guys, caffeine used to be on WADA's banned list.
Oh.
I think they might even be bringing it back in certain quantities. So we should all be careful joking about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, then they don't even have to test me. All they have to do is look at the cup on my desk.
Just look at my eyes. Just look at my eyes.
My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been Will Leach of Sports on Earth and Patrick Gruby of Vice Sports. Thanks to both of you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.